I'm Don Hodson, and I'm doing a oral history interview for the Spirit of Survival, Voices from the Depression. The date is July 12, 1985, and I'm visiting with Kelly Vandal in his home in Torrington, Wyoming. Kelly, when were you born?
November the 5th, 1912.
And whereabouts was that?
A little on a homestead north of Bridgeport, Nebraska, about 9 miles.
After being born on that homestead, can you relate a little bit about your early years of growing up in that area, Kelly?
Well, the first few years we were hard up like everyone else on the homestead, and our main survival, of course, was what we could produce off the land or what my father could earn by working out. And my folks had a few cows, and they mowed hay along the Indian Creek, and this, and with the substance what my father could earn, was our source of living. And in the summertime, it was hot and dry, and I was the youngest of four children, and always had someone looking after me, of course. And my older sister was more or less the housekeeper when mother had to be outside. And some of our earlier experiences were not all that great. We made do with what we had. I'm not sure just what all information you want here, but...
Where did your folks come from before they came to that homestead?
My father came from in around Des Moines, Iowa, Lineville, in that area in southern Iowa, and mother came from Beatrice, Nebraska, which is south of Lincoln, down towards the Kansas line.
Now, your dad was what, farmed and also worked out too?
Yes, Dad had, in his early years, like most young men, he left the farm in Iowa and went scouting around into Colorado, worked in the gold mines in Colorado, and then he went back to Iowa, and this is where he stayed then until he and mother were married. Then they came to Alliance in the early days, and he railroaded out of Alliance, and then they went back to Beatrice, and then he worked in a corn mill. He was a stationary engineer in a corn mill, and it burned down, and they came back to Nebraska and homesteaded, where I was born.
Now, when did you come to this area of Torrington?
In 1923.
And what, went to school here then, or finished school?
Finished school here, graduated in 1930.
How did you happen to come, your folks moved up to this
yes,
area? With that?
Yes.
What year was that then, in
1923.
Mm-hmm. So, did they farm in this area?
No, they never did. Dad was a railroader. He was with the railroad here. He was never farmed.
What happened after you graduated, 1930 was when you graduated from Torrington High School. What did you do then, Kelly?
Oh, my first job, as I recall now, was with the State Highway Department. We started out at what is now Silvertip and resurfaced all of that road, graveled it from right near Silvertip to what is Bear Mountain now, in the LaGrange area. My job was check weighing with the, they'd send out the weight of the gravel, and my job was to distribute it over the roads according to the weight of the gravel. And that lasted until September. Then I had a real good friend, Reed Gamble, and I were always been good friends in school, so it was time to harvest potatoes, and his dad gave me a job on the potato harvest crew, and that lasted until, I guess, probably along about middle of October. And I tried to get on to the factory a little bit late. Everybody else, all the jobs had been filled then, so I went back out and worked for Mr. Gamble then until in the spring of the year, in the spring of 1931. And I took a job with the Pathfinder Irrigation District on a drag line. And we drained that area up in there now, what is the old Hoysma Ranch. Kelly's have it now, Alice Kelly family. And I worked on that until middle of July. Then I managed to get into the factory, the sugar warehouse. Another friend of mine, Dallas Page's dad, was getting out sugar, and so I went to work for them, and I guess I was with Holly from then on, practically, you might say.
You just stayed with Holly.
Well, that, and when they had campaign, when campaign was on, I would work for them, and then inter-campaign season, when I'd be laid off, I took a job in a machine shop, learned, studied to be a welder and a machinist. And then I'd go back to the factory and applied my knowledge to that and worked in the mechanical crew and went up.
When did you get married then, John?
1934.
In 1934. And you had how many children?
Three. Mm-hmm.
They were?
John, James, and Dick, all boys.
And you have resided then in the Torrington area with the exception of a few years
mm-hmm.
in which you went up to Hardin, what, 19?
Went up there in 1959, and we were there until 1963, and then we were back here until 1973, and then we were in Colorado Springs until I retired in 1978.
When you graduated from high school in 1930, were jobs tough to get?
Well, yes. If a person wanted to work, I think you could get work, but you wouldn't get very much pay. Dollar a day, probably on the farm. If a man was married, he'd probably get $30 a month and a place to live and maybe some eggs and milk and meat and so forth. But being single, in that time, staying at home, I always managed to get a job of some kind.
Do you remember what you got paid for some of your jobs?
Yeah, I do. I 35 cents was probably about the lowest pay. When I was in high school in 29, Neil Wilhite and I worked for a grocery store up here, and we'd get 6.5.
Was that 6.5?
6.5 for Friday evening after school and an all day Saturday. And the day started at 7 o'clock in the morning and ended about 10 at night, so on Saturday. So we got $6.50 for that. So if you figure that out by the hour, well, it wasn't very much pay, but that was about what kids worked for. And then when I went to work for Holly, I was getting 35 cents an hour. And on the drag line, I got 40 cents an hour. So that was about the going, 35 to 40 cents. I've got a check here that I never did cash that I worked for.
Well, this is a check from Holly Sugar Corporation dated December 31st, 1931, made out to you, Kelly Vandal. And this is a check for a large sum of 35 cents, right? What was the occasion that they made you a check
well,
out for 35 cents?
We, those young fellows had a contract for making packages down there. And they saved sugar back. That was made out, the last day of the year, 1931. And they saved back enough sugar to keep us going. We were paid on the piece rate, divided among five of us. Say you put 10 pound sacks in a bale, and that would amount to, when that was done, you made 100 of those, that would be $3 divided five ways. So it would give us 60 cents a 100 to make these 10 pound bales. And in comparison, well, we had 5 pound sugar and 2 pound sugar and 25 pound, but we were paid so much a bale for all of the divided five ways. And they saved back sugar enough to keep us going. And we were anxious to get out of there. We were working 12 hours a day, and we were anxious to get out of there anyway. And along about 6 o'clock, we ran out of sugar. Well, it was normal that everybody put in 12-hour days, so they said, well, we've got this carload of sugar we'd like to get out on the last day of the year. Would you fellas load this carload of sugar? And we said, sure. So we loaded it for them, and they paid us all and just hourly rate, 35 cents.
What type of work, then, did you do over the years at Holly?
Mostly mechanical work. I started in as a mechanic's helper and worked on up to a factory machinist and then shop foreman, assistant master mechanic, and then transferred to Hardin as a master mechanic, and then back here as master mechanic, and then to the main office as district engineer. And then I had mandatory retirement at 65, and I retired. retired from the main office in 1965, or 1978, at age 65.
1930 was 1 year after the, well, 1929 at least, was the stock market crash. Were people in this area aware that there was a stock market crash in 1929 back in the East?
Don, I think they were aware of it, yes. Especially people that were in business, I think. I recall, it didn't hit me that hard because I was staying at home, and you realize you could get quite a little bit for what you had, but you didn't have any money, you know, to spend, really. Gasoline was about 15, 16 cents a gallon. Eggs, I guess, about 12 cents a dozen. And hay, $3 or $4 a ton, something like that. I'm just not sure what all the prices were, but you could adjust your living to that, to your daily wages, you know, for dollar and a on up.
Did you feel that, for example, going back to 1930 again, did you feel you were in a depression at that time out in this area?
Yes, I think the people, that generally, people felt like they were, you know, it was hard times, and you talk to those people that, say, 20 years older than I am now. See, people along that time that were 40 years old, they were in midlife, and I think they felt like that, you know, they'd come out of the good times, and this area in through here was, fairly new country at that time. They were breaking up a lot of the land, and they were hard up, but when the Depression hit, they was more hard up, and a lot of them couldn't pay their taxes, and they just naturally moved off the land. And I think the Depression, the worst part of it, was the conditions, the weather conditions, the grasshoppers, the drought, and the grasshoppers, along with the low prices, hit about as hard as anything.
Did it make any change in your own parents? They were come through some hard times, as you say.
My father was on a regular salary, and he adjusted your living to that, and I think probably they were setting, as good as a lot of people. A lot of people were in business. I know Eleanor's folks were in business. I think they felt the jar worse than my folks did, because my folks were on a regular salary. But don't you feel that, Eleanor?
Well, Daddy had sold the grocery store.
Yes.
And I think that he sold it probably about 1930. I'm not sure. And after he had sold that, he had reinvested and built some buildings over in Wheatland. Because they were putting in a new sugar factory over there. And he thought that Wheatland was doing kind of what Torrington had done, because he had the good grocery business here at the time that the factory was built here, Torrington. Not a big boom, but it was a gradual growth, and everybody was doing pretty well. And he thought the same thing would happen over at Wheatland, but that didn't happen. And so after that,
Did Torrington continue to grow throughout the 30s in those depression and drought years? Was there continued growth, or did businesses?
I think it held its own, really, just pretty good shape. I'll tell you, the sugar factory kept this town alive during that time, because every fall they would have a 70, 80 day run. And if you could get in at the factory and pay off some of your bills and kind of give you a new start, a lot of the drylanders would come in, a lot of the fellows on the farm, as soon as they could get their beet crop out, they came in, and consequently a man just standing in line out there didn't have much of a chance, because they were protected local people. And there used to be sugar tramps, you know, in the early days they called them sugar tramps. They'd tramp from one place to another. But anyway, during the Depression, there was very little of that. They just hired pretty much local people. And it sure helped out to bring that amount of money into the community, which kind of held Torrington from feeling hard times.
Was that Hawley's policy then, to try to hire locally to help people in
yes.
those tough years?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you could see the Torrington gradually grew, Lingle grew less, Yoder grew less, Fort Laramie grew less, you know, but they kind of come into Torrington because of the factory mainly, and it was the county seat. And Torrington held its own, and just as soon as things started picking up, well, Torrington did too.
I'm rather curious if businessmen had to change any of their practices during those 30s, or did you find businesses going out of business more than usual, or were they able to?
Well, I think of the clothing stores, I think, had it pretty rough. Piggly Wiggly came in here, and the Skaggs, not the Safeway, but the Skaggs company, you know, there was O.P. Skaggs, and then there was the other Skaggs, you know. But I think grocery stores held together pretty well. Filling stations held together pretty well, oil companies and so forth. Terry Carpenter came in here and started the gas war. And I think he dropped under maybe 3 or 4 cents a gallon under the regular price of gas. He shipped in a carload of gas and would sell it out. And the cars would be backed up for blocks, you know, to load up their tanks if they had that.
Was that quite an event?
Quite an event. Yeah, quite an event. Yeah.
What year was that, do you recall?
How about 1931, I guess, something like that, 30, 31.
You were fortunate, I suppose, in having a job throughout those years.
I consider myself fortunate, yes.
Were there a lot of young men that couldn't find jobs at that time?
Yes. Yeah, I would say there was a lot of them that would, you know, went out to different places. I know Hawley opened up another factory out in California in 1935, and a lot of them that had worked here went out there and went to work. But the majority of them stuck around here and did what they could and stayed on deck and survived until they could get on something regular. Pardon? Yes. A lot of them went up to CCC camps, you know, learned a trade. And it did a lot of good. It cleaned up a lot of the forest. And I think they did a lot of good that way.
Well, the people then that did stay around, did you find some examples of families who had been fairly wealthy and suddenly were now poor? Did that occur much?
Maybe you better shut that off and think about that a while.
Yes, go ahead.
Well, we thought that they were doing, in the clothing business, we thought that they were doing good. They rented a nice home. They seemed to have a fair amount of business. But after talking to the son 50 years later, that they had a real struggle during that time. And his father later on went on to be Governor Miller's secretary. He was a strong politician. But we thought at the time they were really setting quite high, but after talking to the son, we realized, which we didn't realize then, that they were in pretty tough circumstances.
Did families try to kind of hide that, the fact that they were having a struggle making ends meet?
Did people in town
try to hide that fact and try to carry on their daily life?
Isn't it human nature, though, Don? You know, people put on a false front, you know, you might be sinking, going on a sinking ship, but you still try to maintain a false front. Isn't that, you know, it's typical today. I think a lot of people putting on the false front today, they're just maybe financially pretty well strapped, you know, but they don't let it be known.
Were there any forms of relief for people, you know, who really had trouble perhaps what? Feeding their families. Were there any ways in which churches helped or the county helped? What could be done?
Well, not
families helped each other.
Not until WPA started, you know, the Works Progress Administration and the CCC. This all came in the 32 after Roosevelt was elected. And a lot of it went, you know, farmers came in and they would give them so much for two horses, so much for four horses. Maybe they'd build roads or maybe whatever there was to do, you know, in this Works Progress Administration. They would do a lot of things that way. And try to keep them on the farm and try to keep something going for them.
How did people feel about going on relief or taking a WPA job in the 30s? Did they, was that kind of a sense of shame? Did it bother them any, or how did they feel about it?
Yes, I think they were real reluctant to go on there, but it was a matter of maintaining your family and maintaining a household. They would take that, but this, for the majority of them, I think they would get off of it as soon as they could. But I know when the fellows that I knew that went on there, they were factory workers and they had families. And when you get laid off at the factory, and sometimes you could go back and they'd work you an hour or two loading out sugar and then they'd send you home. And others, you know, that had, they couldn't live on that. They would take a job with the WPA or something, but as soon as they could get off and get something better, they'd get off. But it wasn't anything that they wanted to do, for sure.
Did people feel then that WPA did a good, provided real service in this area?
Yes, I think they did. It was a kind of, you know, a laughing stock in lots of ways of some of the things they did, but nevertheless, they turned in a little money to the county and the people could live on it. Partially live on.
I was wondering if people tended then to look down on those who got WPA jobs in the field.
I didn't think so. I think they'd try anything else before they went on it, you know. But a lot of them, wheat farmers and so forth, it's well to do today. I think some of their parents was on WPA just to kind of hold things together so they could look for better days.
Ran across a little article in the paper in which the editor at that time, a man by the name of Loomis, mm-hmm. of the Torrington Telegram, had made a comment that it seemed like people who were on relief might be driving their cars around town too much and that maybe something ought to be done with these people who were on relief and wasting too much gasoline. Rather curious just to what degree government relief was really looked upon with suspicion. People who were on relief really had to be careful.
Well, you have those people in government offices yet today, I think, that take advantage of things, and they did then. You know, they took advantage of the WPA. They would put people on, pat them on the payroll and collect the money and this and that, and it was nothing uncommon, I guess, for some of the fellows that were running the offices to gouge the government like they do anymore, you know. But as far as helping out, I think it did a lot of good to get people through the real hard times. The intent was all right, but there's always people that's willing to take advantage of the generosity of the government.
Did you see any change in people's attitude about them?
Well, I think, yes, I think probably a lot of people just thought, well, you know, especially the hard times, the depression and the drought, and you just, some of them, I think, got the feeling there wasn't going to be another tomorrow, you know, and they kind of let down. And did you have that feeling, Elder?
For some, yes. It was
I don't think it was a general thing, but I think for some it was a revolting experience. We saved our nickels and dimes and bought a Monopoly set, another couple of us, and they had a little girl about John's age, and we'd get together and play Monopoly all night or half the night. That was our form of entertainment, you know. But
did people start looking for those things to spend their time, perhaps? Were there other forms of entertainment? Monopoly, you mentioned there was one. Yeah, were there other things that people could do to perhaps take their mind off the lack of...
Oh, we had a golf course, you know. People played golf, and it didn't hardly cost them anything, you know. The owner's dad and several businessmen went together and bought some land right out here where the golf course is now, where Henry Davis's place is. They bought that. That was the first golf course. Then they had one out on the hill out north towards Jim Snow place. And they, I don't know what else they did for entertainment.
Lots of balls.
You know, you could go to the show for 35 cents.
Did a lot of people go to movies from out here?
Yes. If they, you know, if you had the 35 cents, well, you'd go. But most people kind of, you know, they had knew they had to have a little entertainment of some kind.
Eleanor, you mentioned that everybody seemed to be in the same boat. Were there still some fairly wealthy people, and did you find some examples of where people actually made money during the Depression?
Well, before, you know, the beer came back in, you had a lot of bootleggers, you know. They were making a lot of bootleg moonshine, and I think those fellows did pretty good, you know. They
were there particular types of individuals, whether they were bankers, lawyers, whatever, that were able to get through the Depression, didn't really suffer that much? And as you point out, were they very, even more than careful to hide the fact that they were all right? Did that happen?
Well, I never felt like anybody was really, you know, tried to boast the fact that they were making a lot of money. If they had it, they were conservative. There was a lot of gangsterism going on. We never had that around here particularly, but you know, in the big cities there's a lot of gangsterism going on. And Dillinger and some of those fellows, you know, were operating, but as far as anything like that, I don't think we had that here.
Did people seem to be drawn closer together?
Yes.
Because of hard times, or did
yes.
they tend to become...
No, I think it had a tendency to bring people together, yeah. Because you're all kind of hard up, and nobody, you start out at $15 on Monday morning and make the rounds, get back in the bank on Saturday nights, you know. So everybody get a piece of it, a little, kind of go around.
Were there some ways then they could help each other?
Well, you know, if you lived out here in the country and you had a few extra eggs, or if you had some butter or anything like that, well, you delivered that to the minister and he lived on that. He didn't have cash to take him in or anything like that, and he didn't need cash. All he needed was, you know, something to support his family, and this is the way they did, you know. They'd say, well, you have this and that and the other thing, and it was just as good as cash as far as that's concerned. Well, you wouldn't think of that now, you know, but taking the minister a dozen eggs.
What about townspeople? Were there ways in which townspeople could help each other?
Well, I don't know how they did, really. As far as help is concerned, yes, if you had, you know, someone needed domestic work in the house and you had some money to hire somebody with, well, yes, you'd, and your neighbor would come over and help you out and get a few dollars that way. I suppose that would be a means of help because there's nobody paid any income tax for sure.
Problems maybe out of work or having trouble feeding their family or bringing in enough money. Did they tend to blame themselves for their predicament, Kelly?
No, I don't think they blame themselves, Don. I think they don't know who they did blame, if there's any blame to be put. I think they just felt like they were victims of circumstances, more or less. I never felt like that anyone else felt like they blamed themselves, you know. Just you relate those times to these kind of times right now. You don't find very many of these fellows that will admit that they would blame themselves for going out here and taking on an obligation. At the time they took on the obligation, they felt things were going to stay like they were. Well, the thing didn't stay that way. Then the thing went bad against them. But I don't think they actually wanted to say that, you know, to take the blame themselves. They were just victims of circumstances. That's the way it looks to me now. I would relate that these conditions to those times. How would you relate it? Would you?
Well, I see some at this particular time in being in a farming area, which our whole economy seems to revolve around farming. I see some feeling that the government perhaps is not fault. There's some blame placed on the government today. I see some blame placed on bankers today, with the feeling that bankers had encouraged farmers to expand. And I don't know, did you find any of that? That's just my own assessment of what's happening right now. Did you sense that? Was there any blame directed toward government, toward, for example, President Hoover, toward bankers at that time?
Well, you hear a lot of comments, you know, about President Hoover because, again, he was a victim of circumstances. He was in the presidency at the wrong time when this whole thing hit, and you don't know who tightened up what. You know, they just tightened up the currency. They just tightened up the money. You couldn't get any money out of anything for anybody. And I don't think this country is any different than it was in Europe at the time that Hitler came to power. You know, people were take 300. What was it? So many 3 million people out of work, and he managed to get them back and get them going, and I think the same thing was happening over here about that time. People were just, the factories were closed down, and people were out of money. They didn't have any money to buy anything, and as soon as they got the machinery rolling again, as far as the ranchers and people around here, they always felt that the bank held a pretty tight rein on things. Probably if they'd loosened up money in the bank, we'd have been better off a lot earlier than we were and staged a better comeback. But they held a pretty tight rein on and didn't let the money out like they should have until it got to the point where, you know, the government was letting out money to fellows to go ahead and expand at a low rate of interest and got things moving, going again.
Could you go into the bank if you wanted to buy an automobile or you wanted to buy a house in those years? Was very easy to get a loan from the bank in the 30s.
Oh, I don't think the main bank here at that time, the Citizens National Bank, I don't think that if you just wanted to buy a car, your chance would be pretty slim of getting any money, is my guess.
Anybody buying any new cars? You know, advertisements, for example, for Chevrolet 6s or Ford cars were as low as $600-$700 at that time. Was anybody buying a new car?
Yeah, they shipped in a car. They would ship in a carload of cars in a box car, you see, and there'd be about four cars in there, and they'd be sandwiched in there, and you'd unload these cars, and they were bringing in, probably two carloads a month, something like that. Chevrolet, they were moving them. Eleanor's dad was in the Chrysler business, and he brought in a lot of new Chryslers, and Bump was in the Chevrolet business. And at that time, why the Hulkenbrinks were in the Ford business. And between those, that group of dealers, well, I suppose they were moving on the average of maybe two carloads a month, something like that.
What about your own self? You start out, say, 35 cents an hour. Could you live on that? On those wages?
Well, say 35 cents an hour, and you were working 12 hours a day. So that made you $4.20. Is that right? And you don't have any time to spend it. so it'll go quite a little ways.
When you got married then, in 1934, was it pretty tough?
Yes.
Were you still making those wages? I should ask. Did your wages
come up? No, the wages were starting to come up then.
Even during the 30s?
Yes. See, as I was going along, I was making, serving my time as an apprentice, I was getting 15 cents an hour. Those kind of times was kind of tough to make it. But then you go to the factory, and with the increase of my knowledge in welding and machine work, then I was getting 50 cents an hour. Well, you take working those kind of hours every day of the month, then that would take up the slack. So you could get along on a little less in the summertime because you could pile up a little bit in the, you weren't paying any income tax. Everything that you got was on your check. There wasn't with any withholding. Well, I take that back. They took out a dollar for medical insurance down at the factory, which if you had to go to a doctor or something, you could draw a minimum of about $10, which would give you a couple office calls or maybe three office calls, something like that. But everything else was yours when you took it, and you could take it home with. You could conserve that money, and that would carry you through until the next campaign season again.
Were people able to charge at that time at the grocery store, clothing store? I mean, did they use credit very much?
Oh, yes. I think everybody that had a steady job had a credit at the grocery store because you got paid every 2 weeks. You'd go in there and pay your bill. They had a regular charge account slip. You'd go in there and you wanted this and that, and they'd write that down and put that away. And at the end of the month, they'd give you a receipt. At the end of the month, if you kept your receipts and you checked with them, well, then you could, or every 2 weeks, whatever it was. To see your electric, I think our utilities was a dollar minimum, wasn't it, for electricity. And then they went on the combination rate. If you happen to have a refrigerator, we got 10 kilowatts for a dollar. And then when they went on the combination rate, everything above 10 kilowatts cost you 7 cents. When they went on the combination rate, you got 25 kilowatts for 2.5, and everything above that then was, I think, 3 cents a kilowatt. So you could get, if you went over the minimum, it didn't cost you very much, say 2.5 a month for electricity. And natural gas was probably, I suppose to heat our little house, probably $10 a month. So you didn't, if you were making $4.20 an hour and the factory happened to run for 20 or 100 days, well, you'd get, say, $420 with very little taken out except your living and house expenses. Well, you could put away a little money to carry you through the next summertime.
So you could make ends meet then, month by month.
You had to make it meet. That's all there was to it.
Did you worry, though, about...
Sure you worry.
Did you?
Sure you do. You know, you worry about whether you're going to, something go wrong or get hurt or something like that. You had compensation, but it didn't amount to much. Yeah, you worry now. If you're young and got a responsibility, I would think they would worry if they got any gumption at all, wouldn't you?
Did Did wives go out and work then to help increase that income in families in town?
Gosh, no. I don't think so.
They hired the men.
The women could not find work? Or did they try to go out?
Unless you were single.
Did married women try to go out and find jobs at all?
Some of them.
Domestic food. Domestic work, maybe.
Involved in the business world.
Do you think?
Now, I won't say that completely either, because there were some who kept books. My aunt kept books all the time. She was married, she didn't have a family. But anyone who had a family kept books.
Her responsibility was at home.
So the wife primarily had to stay home and take care of the children and generally did not go out and look for a job because it just wasn't available. Do you think that women worried then?
Sure, but you were concerned. You did whatever you could in your home to make things come out. You did your own sewing, which a lot of women do now. Did a lot of your own sewing, you tanned.
You know, Don, you can do a lot if you have to, you know. You can cut down a lot of things if you have to. And it don't hurt you that much, you know.
So the idea then was to cut back on what you spent. Whereas today, it's to increase your income, because many women, it's almost becoming customary for wives to go out and work so they can make a house payment or
yeah.
a car
the more
payment.
You have, the more you spend.
What about during those years in the 1930s, were there any ways that you could see the community change, Kelly? Was the Depression having a marked effect that you could tell in the community?
Oh, I don't know. I think after they started bringing 3-2 beer back in and maybe a little more of the hard liquor, I think you probably noticed a little more of a breakdown in their beliefs, and it was just a change of times, you know. We're just growing up, and it wasn't like it was, I don't think, quite.
I was rather
weren't curious. The God-fearing people, maybe you might say, that they used to be.
I was curious, as people found themselves now facing more difficulties, did that have any effect on church membership or church attendance, do you think? Did attendance go up?
I think it did. Yeah, I think it did, you know. They felt like that there was, you know, when the Depression hit and the drought hit and everything, that if they could be a better person, then maybe it helped a little bit.
What about older people? Did they suffer more in those years?
I think so. I think so, because you say a suffer, they, anymore, you know, they do a lot for the older people. But they kept the older people in the home. And I think that generation was more inclined to take care of the older people. But I think that the older people suffered a little bit more inwardly than they do now, because they didn't have any entertainment to, you know. Now they've got TV and all the things that to go to kind of help them pass the time of day. And I think the older people in those days, if they were incapacitated, it was a long, hard struggle, you know, because there's nothing to entertainment, and the other people were trying to make a living, and I think they were neglected to a certain degree.
Did you find that the younger people then had to bear the burden of, for example, their older parents coming in to live with them?
I don't think they felt it as a burden. I think they felt it as a responsibility. I don't think they, you know, I don't know of anybody I know my grandfather came to live with us and grandmother for a while. And I think they would go from place, you know, child to child. And I don't think that it was just more of a visit than it was or responsibility, but just being a kid, I couldn't analyze that too well, but we were always glad to have the grandparents there, you know.
Did you find during those years that your relatives and the in-laws, did they come to visit you more often?
No, I wouldn't say so. I know that we live next to the railroad, and we have a lot of, we call them hobos. They would come, you know, and never, my dad would never turn a person away, if he, you know, and they soon learned that, you know, the word kind of gets around, and I know they fed a lot of fellows that were looking for jobs during the Depression days that needed help, needed food.
Was there a little bit of a fear, though, of these railroad hobos that they came
no.
to? And no fear of them?
No. Those fellows were, you know, a lot of gentlemen among them. They weren't hoodlums by a long shot. They were another victim of circumstances. They'd had good jobs, and they were out on the road trying to find something to maintain their families. And the ones I've talked to, anyway, as a kid, they were just as good as anyone else, as far as I was concerned.
There was, what, a rather sympathetic attitude?
That's right.
You mentioned a little bit ago about when people or when men lost their jobs in the community, they tended then to stay in the area and look for something else. Did that seem to be typical, rather than the man lost his job, he said, well, I'm going to go to Denver, I'm going to go back east. Did people tend to stay in this area, even though they lost jobs?
No, I think if there was something, you know, and I was just talking to a man the other day, and he said, you know, during the Depression, he said, I went to Denver and worked. And I think this was true with a lot of them. I didn't realize time, but he said, you know, quite a few of them, you know, this one or that one would go away, but come back when it was time, you know, the farming started to open up again in the spring of the year, maybe they could get into campaign and work campaign, and if it was a short run at the factory, then they'd go out someplace else until it was time to get back in the field in the spring of the year, because when those days, you know, you're working teaming horses, and there's just a lot of handwork, and pretty much every farm had a hired man or two around, because when they could come back, they'd come back and go to work again. But I think it did, a lot of them just, and a lot of them left and stayed away, as far as I was concerned, too.
What about farmers who lost their farmlands, perhaps for taxes, or couldn't make their payments? Did these farmers in the outlying areas, did they tend to come into Torrington when they had to sell their farm?
Yes, I think they did. I don't recall very many of them. They just kind of toughed it out. A lot of them did, and I don't know. I don't recall of anybody right now that. Well, I was thinking of Wallace Walker's family. You know, they were out in the south in the Goshen Hole area, and they managed to stay on right on out there, but they would. The young men would come to town and find jobs and do something, you know, haul beet pulp and feed cattle or whatever needed to be done. You see, those days they hauled a lot of beet pulp. They had wet pulp and they'd haul it out and feed cattle. Holly was furnishing the cattle and you'd furnish the feed, and they had some kind of a deal worked up whereby they would furnish that part of it and you'd furnish the feed, put your feed into them. If you had to have a hired man, well, that was his job, to be to haul hay and beet pulp and whatever it took to feed him.
You mentioned about older people probably had a little tougher during the 30s. What about younger people, perhaps teenagers growing up or young people just getting out of high school? Did they find that their hopes or their expectations or perhaps their dreams of going on to college, did those things have to be changed for them?
Oh, I think, Don, if they had the, you know, determination to go on to school, that was the way of going, you know. It might not be the best. You might wear some hand-me-down clothes or something like that. But I think if you had determination to go, I think it would be with the individual mostly that they went ahead and went to school.
I was rather curious if the Depression really forced changes in among young people that
oh, I think it would have had
perhaps their what they wanted to do in life.
I think it would have had some reflection on it, yeah, you know. But I really feel right strong about it. If they wanted to go ahead, I think there was a way of doing it. Now, not maybe in all cases, but in this locality, I would have said that they could have made a way, you know.
I know that parents often feel they want the best for their children and try to do a lot of times as much as they possibly can. And I'm rather curious if parents at that time felt that, or if they were bothered by the fact they couldn't seem to help their children go on.
Oh, I suppose no doubt they would have been if they were that destitute. You naturally are concerned about the welfare of your children, you know. I would have said yes, probably.
What were the impressions that people had about Franklin Roosevelt?
Mixed, pretty much, you know, depending on... I think he was probably... For that time, when he started out, he was quite popular. In fact, he had to be quite popular from the Depression days and hard times until up to the war years. I think maybe he overextended his power a little bit. But I think when he first went in there, he had the respect and the admiration of a lot of people.
Republicans were good.
A lot of them switched over, yes, I think.
Did you find, because this was basically a Republican area, it still remains that today, as a matter of fact, but you found a lot of Republicans switching over to become Democrats in those years.
Of course, I would say so. I think a lot of them, you know, have been through all of that. It's, well, couldn't get much worse, so we might as well make a change.
Did they talk very much about the New Deal that was associated with those years?
Talk about it? Yes, I think it was a topic of discussion. But like Ronald Reagan's tax proposal, yeah, I think it was probably quite a bit of talk and controversy both ways. But he kind of put people on the right track though for a long time. The NRA, you know, the National Recovery Act, so that. If you were dealing in one certain thing, you didn't deal in everything else.
Did the NRA affect businessmen much in this area?
Not a whole lot, I don't think.
Was there any particular program that probably really had a major effect of the New Deal program?
Mm-hmm.
Social Security, for example, came in, what, 1935?
Mm-hmm. No, I don't think of any particular one, you know, that they were opposed to. Really, I don't think of any. The New Deal covers so many things.
Do you think the Depression changed your life, Kelly?
How would you answer that? You know, how do you feel with?
Brought up your family, the values. Did it have any bearing? Did it, I suppose, kind of sink into you and did it change you?
Well, you always have the feeling, you know, it could happen again. That was the thing of it. I think it gave you a sense of trying to do the best you could on what you had and try to put away a little bit so that if it ever did happen again, you could live through it. You know, I don't think anybody has any regrets. I can't pinpoint any real part of it that would have affected me. And
I'm kind of wondering if, you know, if coming through that, if people who lived through the Depression might be much more saving, much more conservative than people are today.
Well, I think so. I know we were talking to Eleanor's cousin, and he said he's about, what, 20 years younger than us, something like that. But he said people in the part of Nebraska where he's from have never seen this before. He said people my age have never seen what we're going through with right now. He said, I didn't see this tough times coming on, and he said, I don't think anyone else my age could see it coming on. He said, there may have been someone smart enough to see this thing coming on, but he said, I couldn't see it, but he said, a lot of people older, you know, 20, 25 years older, may have seen it coming on, but he said, we have never seen this thing, you know, the bottom just fall out of things like it has now. And I think this is typical of the way it happened then. It's just one of those things that dropped out and nobody was really braced for it. But I think, yes, if a person is going to, if you've been through that, you kind of, it brings back a memory that it could happen again.
There's always that kind of fear there.
Well, it would, yeah, it's a possibility, you know, of it happened again.
Was there anything that you felt that you really wanted during those depression years that you couldn't get?
That's kind of a tough one.
John, in those days, you didn't start out with everything like that. You probably started up housekeeping with hand-me-downs from anybody that would give you anything, and you were sitting at the house. Things didn't have to match. It's a different world.
But I can't think of a thing that, you know, that I really had a burning desire for. Maybe that's just my own human put together, but I guess I've never really been that way as far as that's concerned.
Kelly, was there any point then that you really felt times were getting better? You mentioned there, everything just seemed to, the bottom dropped out of those years. Was there finally a point where you sensed that life was really getting better for you?
Well, when the war effort started, Don, I think this kind of opened up, you know, the doors for everybody. I was working at the factory, and the superintendent allowed me a half a day off to instruct people in machine work and welding. And they started up, and a lot of the people that came into the class were people that were farmers. Some of them had been on WPA work and so forth and so on, but they were anxious and eager to learn a trade. And the superintendent allowed me to work a half a day at the factory so that I could keep my seniority established and my job established. I was shop foreman there. And to instruct people on a regular basis, 7-hour shift. And this then started us, I think, on the road to recovery. We bought a place and built a new house on it. 1940, wasn't it? And I think times were starting to look a little better as far as we were concerned, long about 38, because we could kind of see our way. We could borrow money to build a house at about 5% interest and didn't take a whole lot down. And you could buy a lot here in town for an inside lot for $300 and one a corner lot for $350, and you could get $50 down, and that'd allow you to borrow about $2,500 or $3,000 to build your home. And this started along about 1937 and 38. And then by the time we got into this, drawing pretty good money at the factory and the good money instructing these fellows in machine work and welding, and then we paid our house off in 7 years. And so times are starting to look better, you see.
You had rented during those 30s. How much did you pay for rent?
$20 a month. And if we stayed a year, we got the 12th month free.
Do you call your grocery bill a month?
I tried to hold it for you $20 a month.
$18, $20. And you could buy 5 gallons of gas for 80 cents, and that would take us a week. And
did people have insurance?
Well, we had life insurance, but we didn't have health insurance.
Just paid your medical.
Paid your medical. I think when our boys came to $35 for maternity fee, wasn't it? I only spent nine days in the hospital. And that was the rule of thumb in those days, you know, when you had a baby, well, you spent lying flat on your back for 9 or 10 days. And I don't think the hospital bill was, what, $3 a day? $3 a day for hospital bill and $35 for maternity fee.
Any other bill?
Yeah, this is prepared baby food, you know. You had to mix with water. 90 cents a can. We've had a lot of cans.
Kelly, we've covered a lot of things this morning and talking about the expression. Is there anything that perhaps I've left out that you thought about that you want to add?
Well, the only thing I would say is that if a person don't have your sights set too high, well, this is a pretty good world to live in. When you compare it to other countries, I'll take this depression and drought and a whole bit compared to some countries. Because we got our freedom here to do what we want to do.
Well, I agree with you. But I have a feeling that the Depression, it wasn't just all money. The elements played a lot of factors on it. You can't change that. I remember so well talking to one of the young hoop farmers a few years back, and we would never go through what we'd gone through before. He told me he knew how to take care of the land, which I agree with. But you know, when the drought comes, then your hands are kind of tied.
People were just simply victims of the weather.
Of everything, yes. Of all land at once.
You think we could survive another depression?
It'll take a lot of education, a lot of people have.